It's great to have you all with us. My name is John Wunschmacher. I'm the university librarian here at Virginia Commonwealth University. And on behalf of the faculty and students and staff of Virginia Commonwealth University, I extend to everyone the warmest welcome for the 17th celebration of the VCU Cabell First Novelist Award. It's great to have everyone here. I actually have an opening tonight that's only tangentially related, but I think it's an important announcement. I'm proud to say that effective January 1st, 2018, VCU Libraries will become members of the Association of Research Libraries, the preeminent organization. Thank you. 115 largest and most accomplished university library systems in North America. VCU is the first U.S. member to join ARL in over 15 years, and it joins University of Virginia and Virginia Tech as the only Virginia members of this distinguished company. ARL membership is truly a prominent recognition of VCU's maturation as a major research institution and a major step forward in our development as a research university. As you can see, we join a distinguished company in the Southeast, and what you will see up here is that every major flagship university in the Southeast are members of ARL. We joined that company, we deserve to be in that company as Virginia Commonwealth University. Yes. Give yourself a round of applause. Thank you. The VCU Cabell First Novelist Award is one of the most important community engagement programs we have, and it is among many that supported ARL's recognition of VCU as a flagship institution. We are proud to partner with the Cabell Associates and others to provide some of the financial and logistic support that make this program possible. Beginning last year, we're also delighted to provide this new, more permanent home for the VCU Cabell First Novelist Award. And I think such a highly successful and recognized program deserves the kind of world-class facility that we're in tonight. This lecture hall has proven to be a really fabulous space for readings and programs and events of all kinds, and it's been in very high demand by folks across the university. In the last fiscal year, closing on June 30, 2017, we held over 115 events in this space that engaged over 24,000 people in our first full year of operation. We're running ahead of that this year, too. So this is a great university resource, and I'm really glad to have the VCU Cabell First Novelist in this space. But I do have an advertisement request for you as you're here in this space. We need your help to make sure this is the very best space of its kind at any library in Virginia for the kinds of author readings and scholarly lectures of the sort that we're going to experience tonight. So your donations are helpful and important and essential that we use to fulfill the full promise of this space. We have a lot left to do. We have all kinds of new events that we want to do. We want to improve the experience that you have in this room. So help us. It's the support of you that make these kind of programs possible. You'll find in all your chairs our little advertisement about the Friends of the Library. Please pick up that brochure, and I hope that you will join all of the Friends of the Library here tonight to join them and help them bring these programs here. We do have members of the Friends of the Library and the Cabell Associates Board here. I wonder if they could stand, please, and be recognized. Thank you so much for all of you. Thank you so much. This is the 10th year of co-sponsorship between the College of the Humanities and Sciences, the Cabell Associates, and the VCU Libraries in support of the Cabell First Novelist Program. And few partners have enjoyed the kind of success that we've enjoyed in this collaboration. Since 2007, VCU Cabell First Novelist Award has grown enormously in stature and in recognition, and is now a keystone literary event for the libraries who are publishing their first novel. And I hope it's a keystone literary event for the Virginia Literary Arts community. I think you can see that with the attendance here tonight. Many thanks especially go first and foremost to the Cabell Associates for their support of the VCU Cabell First Novels. A little bit of background. The Cabell Associates were founded in 1981 by Margaret Cabell, the wife of Richmond novelist James Branch Cabell, after whom this library is named. And the Cabell Associates continue today to encourage scholarly work by James Branch Cabell, to foster his legacy, and to elevate his profile as one of America's most distinguished literary writers. In fact, a writer who helped define the art of fantasy writing for the likes of Neil Gaiman and others, and who remains today one of our most distinctive historical voices of political satire. If you haven't read any of his books, read Jurgen, you will enjoy it, and you'll be shocked by it. So I hope you have to do that. Joining the Cabell Associates tonight as co-sponsors are VCU's College of Humanities and Sciences and the Department of English, the VCU Libraries and VCU Friends of the Library, and the Barnes & Noble Bookstore here at VCU. And we extend special thanks tonight, of course, to our colleagues in the Creative Writing Program here at VCU, which does almost all the hard work in reading all the candidates, administering the award, and selecting the winners. No easy task. And finally, we owe many grateful thanks to everyone in the VCU Libraries, the Department of English, and everyone else who have done all the logistics work for tonight's event, so that all you have to do is sit back and enjoy it. So please, a round of applause to all our sponsors. Now on with the show. The VCU Cabell First Novelist Award annually honors an outstanding debut novel published in the preceding calendar year. Each year, the English department receives hundreds of submissions and recruits a small army of students, faculty, staff, and others from around the university to help do the initial screening on these books and to vote on their favorites. We have many members of our broader community here who are a well-educated lot here at Richmond, especially when it comes to literary fiction. We're delighted that they also have opportunity to participate in this work. In fact, community members, including the Friends of VCU Libraries and others, can actually check out, I think, right now, first batch of novels that are here for the 2018 contest. So if you want to check it out and make your opinions known, please do so. You can find them, I think, on the first floor of James Branch Cabell Library. Just ask at the desk there if you don't see them. Guided by these kind of screener reviews, the English department chooses three finalists. And these finalists are then sent to a panel of judges, which includes always the previous year's winner, other authors and local readers who choose the final award. The diverse group of past Cabell First novelists includes many novelists who have gone on to become major voices in their field. Recent winners include Angela Flournoy for her novel The Turner House, which was a National Book Award finalist last year. Boris Fishman for a replacement of a captivating first short novel from a Soviet immigrant with an astounding command of English for a Soviet immigrant. Helen Wecker for her celebrated fantasy-tinged novel, The Golem and the Genie, which was so successful that she's now working on a sequel to that book. And Ramona Esbel for No One Is Here Except All of Us, a magical tale that grapples with history and the horrors of war. You can see a full history of these on the exhibit that we have on James Branch Cabell. Just go to the James Branch Cabell exhibit on our website, and you can click on the winners of the first novels and see all the way back. So you can see from the process we go through and the astounding winners of this award that selecting the first novelist is a rigorous process, and the winners have gone on to do just wonderful things. That's why we're so proud to have this year's winner, Jay Chair, with us tonight. And I know we're all looking forward to hearing her read, discuss her work, and hear more about the process of creating such a wonderful novel. By tradition, the VCU Cabell First Novelist Coordinator, who organized and oversaw the whole process that selected this year's winner, the Cabell Fellow, has the great honor of introducing our author this year. So presenting the winning author tonight is Julie Keene, third-year student in MFA in Creative Writing here at VCU, and a specialist in fiction writing. So I don't know where Julie is, but there she is. Come on.
Thank you, John. Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming out tonight. I think you're going to enjoy Jay Chang. We have had a great day today with the kids at the Governor's School, and she was on television this morning, and it's been a blast. I just wanted to say a few more things about this award. It was created by Tom DeHaven and Laura Browder as a celebration of VCU's year-long novel workshop, and it was the first of its kind in the nation. And I've had the privilege of taking Professor DeHaven's novel workshop last year, and I haven't had anybody show me so much patience since I learned to tie my shoes. Thank you. One of the goals of creating this award was to give the MFA students a little bit of experience with the publishing world so we could meet agents and editors and just learn a little bit about the publishing and industry. Tonight we have with us Mark Gerald and Helen Atzma, Jay Chang's agent and editor. One of the things that we have to do as MFAs is read a whole lot of novels. So I would also like to thank my fellow MFAs for all the reading that you're going to be doing, that you are doing. And I'd like to thank the MAs that I've cornered. I've enjoyed some reading too. This brings us to our winner, Wangs versus the World. I called dibs on this book right away because of the title, and I thought the cover was gorgeous. And I was not disappointed. Wangs versus the World is a twist on two quintessentially American stories, The Road Trip and The Rags to Riches Immigrant Tale. So this novel opens with patriarch Charles Wangs' fall from grace. His once mighty cosmetics empire now belongs to the bank. So does his family's beautiful Bel Air mansion and everything in it. So his trip across the country, this road trip is no lark. He's collecting his teenage children because he can no longer afford the tuition at their elite private schools. They are all now homeless, but with really expensive clothes, and the family must ride across the country to seek refuge at oldest daughter Saina's rambling house in the Catskills. Saina is, well, she was, a successful Manhattan artist who is now in hiding after a show that offended the entire art world. And that offending the entire art world part was really, really fun to read. Charles is brash and impulsive. His second wife, Barbara, bitter and withdrawn. High schooler Grace, successful style blogger. College student Andrew dreams of being a comedian. So what could go wrong on a road trip like this? This book is laugh out loud funny, and it's heartrending. It tells the story of a family scraped clean of everything they hold dear and their brave scramble to salvage their lives. The Wangs versus the World is a New York Times editor's choice and one of Amazon's best books of 2016. NPR called the novel unrelentingly fun, but it's also raw and profane, a story of fierce pride, fierce anger, and even fiercer love. In an interview with the Los Angeles Times, Jade Chang remarked, "I really wanted to tell a different immigrant story, about an immigrant family that doesn't necessarily want to fit in, nor do they see themselves as other. They are central to their view of America." And Ms. Chang succeeded in doing just that. I don't think I have to explain to anyone in this room how important the work this book does is in the America we find ourselves in today. This book is fierce. Let's welcome Jade Chang.
Hi. Thanks so much for coming, and thank you for such a lovely introduction, Julie. Sorry. I guess I don't need to stand that close to the microphone. It's been so nice to be here in Richmond and on this campus. It's gorgeous, and I've never been here before, so it's very exciting to see it all. I just want to say thank you so much for awarding me this prize. I feel very honored, especially once I heard about the way in which you guys select the finalists. I've actually never heard of a literary prize that engages a community in the same way. Yeah, so I really feel very excited to have received this one. So I'll just read a little bit from the book for you guys. This part is from Andrew's story, and it is one of the stand-up chapters. At this point, it's a little over halfway through, but there aren't any huge spoilers, I don't think. And Andrew has done one or two stand-up sets somewhat unsuccessfully thus far, or in New Orleans right now. Andrew catapulted himself on stage and shook the MC's hand before turning around to look out at the room. LSU frat boys, townies, and tourists. He spread his arms out. "So, I'm Asian." There were a couple cheers as he turned his head right and left, showing his profile. "Yep, 100% Asian. And I know you want to know what kind, because people always say they can't tell the difference between different Asians, right? And that goes all ways. Like, you can't tell the difference between particular Asians, and you also can't tell the difference between different types of Asians. You know right now you're all thinking, is he kimchi and born-again Christians, or is he sushi and octopus porn?" He leaned in and whispered, "Or was he, that guy I used to work with? That real quiet one in the IT department with a Hello Kitty license plate frame. Except you don't say any of that out loud because you know that thinking that all Asians look alike is one of those stereotypes that's supposed to be super offensive, right? He was starting to feel like himself again. This was different from that club in Texas where his stepmother had seen him bomb. These people were laughing. Who would say why? He saw a guy shush his girlfriend when she leaned over to whisper something. Yes. He pumped a mental fist and stepped a little to the left, turned, and said in a John Wayne as frat boy voice that just sailed out of him, booming and false, "So hey, bro, you Korean, you Chinese." Step out to the right, turned, mimed a super offensive, borderline effeminate gasp, and immediately hated himself for it. Still, he pivoted forward to face the audience. I'll tell you a secret. We can't tell the difference either. He pointed to an Asian guy in the crowd who luckily hadn't moved since Andrew had first spotted him. You look like you could be a real cool-looking Chinese guy or a real dorky Japanese guy. I mean, I really can't tell. Because dudes, honestly, we do all kind of look alike. Oh, thank God I got almost as big of a laugh as he thought it would, which buoyed him, making him talk even more expansively. Oh, by the way, I'm Chinese, so just think, like, dumplings and human rights abuses. But you know who else I can't tell the difference between? White people. He glanced at a few of the white people in the audience, half hoping that they would look upset. I mean, first of all, British, Irish, Scottish? Yeah, what else? Who knows? Oh, and British people. Yeah, you don't look all that different from Germans. Sorry, dudes, y'all both white. Oh, and you all American white Republicans? Yeah, your average Texan and your average Frenchman? You both wear high-waisted pants and have butter-based diets. Not that different. Sorry, haters. Well, let's talk about the particular, because you guys are all sitting there thinking, oh no, no way. We might all be American, but I do not look like that loser on my left. I definitely don't look like that mouth-breathing scat in front of me. Air quotes. He had just done air quotes. What was wrong with him? All right, crowd work. A good stand-up does some crowd work. Whew. Andrew held out a hand toward a white guy in a Nirvana t-shirt with light brown hair that hung to his shoulders. You, grunge boy, nodding down there. That's what you think, right? Well, the only difference I see is that you've got a Nirvana shirt on and that equally brown hair guy next to you has a Pearl Jam shirt on, so you're probably a little bit cooler. All right. That didn't make much sense, but the important thing was to try. And out in the audience, someone shouted back, gratifiedly, Cobain rules! By the way, white people? That's how we tell the males in your species apart. By hair color. It's kind of like with cats or horses, you know? Oh, Dave? He's okay, he's just a tabby. Dime a dozen. Kind of a sloppy drunk. Brian? Hey, yeah, that guy's cool. He's a Palomino. Real nice coat. Shiny. Yo, little tip. Try to get him on your team when you're playing Trivial Pursuit. Man, that guy knows everything about the 80s. Declan? Oh. He's real weird, but kind of beautiful. Not in a gay way or anything, man. It's just, he's a tortoise shell. And he's got these white paws and these yellow eyes that just look through you. He knows something. People were laughing, but he felt the false note in his voice and tried to center it, to take away the performance aspect of it. You know what I think? You know what I really think? All right, join hands, everybody. Just join hands. This is a real kumbaya moment. Guess what? We all look alike. Every single one of us. It was still there, a hamminess that had come out of nowhere. Here he was, swaying theatrically, kumbayaing all over the place. Maybe it was because he hadn't really eaten anything since those donuts before drinking all those whiskey and cokes, and these lights were bringing out his claustrophobia. Flashing forward to the rest of his act, Andrew felt a sudden emptiness. It wasn't that different from what he'd said already. It was all Asian shit, and it wasn't even his best stuff. What was he doing here, anyways? What am I doing? He looked out at the crowd, their faces turned towards him, waiting, and he said, without even thinking, "Hey, have you guys ever had everything in your life change? Like, just everything? Maybe? Anybody?" He waited, hoping that someone would respond. What the hell was he going to say? Just say everything. Sure, why not? You'd never see these people again. All right, just say everything. Like, whatever you think you are, just flips the script and you're left reaching around like an idiot, trying to grab at something familiar because all you want is some, I don't know, just some certainty. A couple of guys in the front row were nodding. Heartened, he went on. You know, you're like, oh, my father's not the man I thought he was, but at least I still have a cool ranch Doritos. Or my girlfriend just dumped me because I didn't want to give it up to her. Just so you know, up to this point, Andrew has been a virgin holding out for true love. But the ladies really love him. But hey, I still drive a sick car. Or, oh shit, my sick car just got repossessed. But at least I still got all my college buds. Or, you know, oh hey, I've been yanked out of college, my family's bankrupt, and I'm in the middle of a crazy cross-country road trip in my dead mom's car because my dad might be delusional and my sister might be a whore, and who the fuck knows about my crazy little stepmother? And believe it or not, I was a virgin up until 2 days ago, and I just lost it to like a 35-year-old who I told myself I was in love with, but that's over, and I'm stranded in this weird-ass city, and how the fuck is this my life? But, oh yeah, I can still, like, recite the Gettysburg Address, so I guess I'm still me, right? Yeah, here's how the Gettysburg Address goes. 67 years ago, our forefathers said, good fucking luck. Andrew breathed. Oh, shit. This was why people loved being on stage. It wasn't the applause. It was the honesty. He'd always thought of himself as an honest person, but he saw now that he wasn't entirely. He plunged ahead. But here's the thing. Here's the shit of it. Here's the bottom down deep truth of it. Take the maybe none of it matters. Like, not the cool ranch Doritos part, not the losing my car part, not even losing my virginity. Well, even as he said it, he knew that wasn't quite true. Okay, the virginity part matters. As much as I tried to front like it was cool and I didn't really care, because it wasn't like no one wanted to sleep with me, I do really feel kind of relieved now. Like, even though it didn't happen the way I thought it would, and really what does in life? At least it happened, and I can move on and stop being so self-conscious about it all. An absurd thought struck him. Yo, I can start flying Virgin now. I mean, I've been avoiding them for years, even though they're clearly the best airline, because I just couldn't face the thought of anyone seeing me standing under that Virgin sign. That was actually true. And drinking Virgin daiquiris. I weep when I think of all the frosty blended drinks I've denied myself. And so was that. Andrew always couldn't believe that these things were actually making people laugh. Oh, man, you know what? I can finally watch The Virgin Suicides. That matters, right? I didn't even want to read the book. A table of awkwardly matched friends just off stage all laughed uproariously at that. And Andrew felt a surge of love for them and for everyone in the bar, and then outward until he wanted to wrap his arms around the entire city of New Orleans. Okay, seriously though, losing my virginity matters to me, but I think that maybe the only thing that really matters, like in the universe and everything in it kind of way, is the connection you make with another person, whatever your relationship is with them. So, me and you here, you know, me up here, 100 of you down there, 80, 75, whatever, all 40 of you down there, I see you. I see you. I fucking see you. Do you see me? Because I see every single one of you, even if you're hiding behind that guy in front of you. And that's all we all want, right? Just that. I see you. I feel you. I know you. And now that I'm done with being a virgin, I'd fuck every single one of you if I could. And it would be tender, and it would be beautiful. Yeah, that's right. I'm not ashamed. That's what I said. I would fuck you with my heart, and it would be tender, and it would be beautiful. The words had just rolled out, unstoppable, and he meant every single one of them. Now the clock of the DJ booth was flashing down at him. It was showing negative numbers, giant and red, counting him further and further into debt to these people who had given him their attention. And so he smiled and raised the microphone, because what else was there left to say? And the MC came back on stage, clapping, clapping, clapping for him.